This is Chris Slade, former University of Virginia defensive end, graduate of 1993, back on the staff at UVA. Excited to be back coaching my old stomping grounds. You're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show.
Welcome to the podcast. It's the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. I'm Chris Graham and joined by Jerry Ratcliffe. And we've got a lot of basketball to talk about, both men's and women's basketball. The men are still playing basketball. One of several ACC teams playing in both the NCAA tournament, NIT, and Virginia will face St. Bonaventure tomorrow night, Tuesday night, in JPJ. One last home game for the 2021-2022 season, with St. Bonaventure making the trip to JPJ tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. And that's because Virginia won last night in Denton, Texas, beating North Texas in overtime. And Jerry, you focused your post-game column on the star of the night, Armon Franklin. We've been waiting for him to have a game like this all season long. Goes 5 of 7 from three-point range. What was it? What's finally clicking with Armon that's got him shooting so well from the three-point range?
Well, we're not certain, really. We have a couple of theories. We have a couple of theories, but we don't know which one might be right. Tony Bennett told us after the game last night that recently they had spotted, going over a lot of film, I guess maybe they were trying to figure out what was wrong too. And sometimes you go back and you watch a player's film from when he was successful to when he was not successful, and you might find something. And he said they spotted a tiny mechanical fault in his shot. He didn't reveal what it was. But they've been working on it in practice and adjusted. And Armon told us after the game that he felt more comfortable shooting it with whatever adjustment was that they made. And, you know, you go all the way back to February 7th, Chris. That's when his slump began down at Duke in that win over the Blue Devils at Cameron. He was 1 for 6 from three in that game. And over the course of the next 8 games, over a 9-game stretch, he was only 8 of 34 from behind the arc. And that's certainly not what he was accustomed to, not why they brought him in, because he was over 40% three-point shooter at Indiana, and that's what they thought he would be here, if not better. I guess since that adjustment against Mississippi State and then North Texas last night, he is 7 of 12 from the three-point range. And last night he just set the super pit on fire. I mean, he was 5 of 7 all in the second half or in overtime, and reeled off 17 consecutive points for Virginia, going from not having a point with 9:30 to play in regulation to Virginia's leading scorer over the course of the next 16 and a half minutes, I guess. So I don't know whether the technical adjustment was what got him going, or if Jason Williford lighting him up at halftime. There's nothing like a coach getting in your face at halftime and saying, come on, man, your teammates are counting on you. You're better than this. You can play better than this. And We weren't in the locker room, obviously, and didn't hear exactly what was said, but that was what was relayed to us from Tony Bennett. Sometimes that's all a player needs, is for a coach to challenge him at a certain point of a game, and he responded in the way you would hope that he would.
He only had one shot from the field in the first half. Only played 8 minutes in the first half.
Yeah,
didn't start the second half. Didn't get in the game until about the 13-20 mark or so the second half. And then he went on that streak. You know, I'll say from a mechanical standpoint, what looks different to me, it looked like his shot up until the last couple of games had a lot more arc to it. And I didn't see him play last year, so I can't tell you like if they maybe reverted back to his previous release and form, but it looked like a lot more of a line drive, more of a straight plane or straighter plane than that the arc he had to it. And boy, it just, you know, you got to a point, he hit 5 of 6 at one stretch. And the one miss was because when he was spotting up, all 5 of his makes were on spot ups. The one miss was when he came off a screen and tried to shoot sort of a running shot. And it was just a little long. It was straight on, but just a little long. So he was lining it up well. And he wasn't even lining things up well previously, you know, in that 8-for-34 stretch dating back a month. And so for a guy to go from 42.4% to low to mid-20s and then go 7 of 12, you hope that the light has gone off for him and that this will be something that you can take. You know, this is why you play the NIT. You're not playing for a national championship, and it's not what you start your season, you know, hoping to do is win the NIT. But this is your team, you know, gets more games, more reps, more practice reps, more game reps, and you have a chance to get better. And Franklin certainly, and Reese Beekman has been playing so well here the last couple of games as well. So, you know, I think Tony Bennett's got to be pleased with what he's seeing from his team.
You're exactly right. I was just before our podcast today, I was on a radio show in Lynchburg, and they asked me what the benefits of the NIT were. And that's exactly what I said. I mean, it's a chance. It's kind of like bowl practice for a football team. It's a chance for your guys to get more experience under pressure, to get better, to develop their game and find ways to win in close contests, because certainly the last two games they played against Mississippi State and North Texas have been down to the wire contests. And, you know, it's also a chance to use this to develop for next year. I can think of at least three instances in Virginia basketball history where they used the NIT to springboard into greater things ahead. Back when Ralph was a freshman, they won the NIT and then started a long run of NCAA tournament appearances. The Stith, Crotty, Corey, and Junior Burrow team.
Jason Williford, don't forget.
Jason Williford. Jason Williford in the early 90s. Won the NIT in overtime over Notre Dame. I think I said last week, if you had seen their faces after that win, you would have thought they won the Final Four. But they, you know, that springboarded them. A couple of years later, they were within a couple of minutes of making it to the Final Four before losing to Arkansas out in Kansas City. And then the Mike Tobey team back several years ago, they didn't win the NIT, but they advanced. They were close to getting to the Madison Square Garden portion of the tournament. And that led to – that sort of bridged the gap between a couple of NCAA appearances and the current – or the just current seven-year run of NCAA appearances. So I'm sure that they're hoping that maybe the rest of this tournament can lead to greater things down the road, and it should.
UVA Orthopedics and Sports Medicine boasts one of the finest teams of doctors in the country, and they're right here in Charlottesville to not only provide care for the University of Virginia athletic teams, but also the Charlottesville and Central Virginia communities. UVA Orthopedics has been a proud sponsor of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show for the past 2 years, with numerous team members featured in weekly segments where doctors share great insight into various sports injuries, what causes them, how to treat them, and recovery time. Their team of experts are there for you and offer the best care to solve your health problems and get you back on your feet. Let their team of specialists get you back in the game.
That's right. You know, that team in 2013 went to the quarterfinals as well, won two games, lost to Iowa, I believe, in the quarterfinals. Yeah. But yeah, they, and then the next year they won 30 games, were a one seed, ACC regular season tournament champions and everything else. So, and then that started that long stretch, as you mentioned, Jerry. So yeah, this is the kind of bridge that can get you there. I'll say this, the fan base seems excited. The game was played last night in Texas. Virginia won the game. Then when St. Bonaventure upset Oklahoma in Norman, the announcement was made relatively quickly thereafter, maybe a half hour or so after, that the game would be at JPJ on Tuesday night. Tickets didn't go on sale until this morning, Monday morning at 9:00. By 9:45, the lower level was completely sold out. We only saw about 5,000, maybe 5,200, I think it was, for the first NIT game last week. We should get a good crowd. We know this is the last home game for the season, and could be, I mean, we know Cody Statman is, it'll be his last hurrah in front of the JPJ crowd. It may be Kihei Clark's, perhaps Francisco Cafaro. Don't know about his status for next year. So a chance to, you know, maybe say goodbye to some guys, and also, hey, just another chance to win the game. Also, Jerry, we don't have to wear masks tomorrow night.
Yeah, thank goodness for that.
I won't know how to act around you without a mask on. Every time I see you, it seems like the last 2 years we're wearing a mask.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And I know it's hard on fans. It's not easy on the media either, because we get there early and we stay late. And having those masks for extended hours is somewhat of a challenge, that's for sure. But, yeah, it seems like the fan base is excited about it. There was some confusion right after the game because some people from Brown were tweeting out that they were going to host because they were a higher seed. Then we came to learn that really there were only four teams seeded in each of the four brackets. Nobody else in those brackets were seeded anything. It was all just kind of up for grabs and whatever the NIT committee deemed the best for the NIT would be host, since because Virginia has a bigger arena and a chance, I guess, for the NIT to make a little bit more cash. The game was shifted, or I don't know if shift is right. It was put in Charlottesville. So, which, you know, I think is probably a good advantage for the Wahoos. They should draw a good crowd and an excited crowd, because, you know, the people that show up for these NIT games, you know, they're true fans, or they wouldn't be there.
They wouldn't be there.
So, I think that's a good thing. And if it's good enough for John Grisham to come out last week, it's good enough for anybody, right?
These two teams were preseason top 25, AP top 25 teams. St. Bonaventure was 23rd, Virginia 25th. This St. Bonaventure team, all five starters are seniors. This is a team that had high expectations coming in. They finished, I mean, right now they're 22-9, so it's not like they didn't live up to them necessarily, just didn't get an NCAA bid. 12-5 in the Atlantic 10 in the regular season. They got knocked out of the A-10 tournament in the first round, the quarterfinal round, a one-point loss to St. Louis, and that's what put them on the wrong side of the bubble, unfortunately, for the Bonnies. They had a double-digit win over Marquette, an NCAA tournament team. They had a couple losses, though, to UConn and Virginia Tech, and the Virginia Tech loss was pretty bad, 86-49 back in December in Blacksburg. That kind of put them sort of behind the eight ball a little bit as far as, you know, the computer rankings and all that stuff, and it never did really catch up. But, yeah, this is a team. I mean, when I say five senior starters, they don't – the coach, Mark Schmidt, who's been there 15 seasons, he plays pretty much those five guys. There's one guy in the front court who gets a few minutes a game. There's one guy in the back court who gets a couple minutes a game. You're pretty much seeing those five guys. And so as a result, they all are double-digit scorers. They're all seniors, all veteran guys. But, you know, you have to wonder how that's going to play, especially, you know, they played Sunday night. They have to travel from Oklahoma to Virginia and then play Virginia's pack line defense and then a mover blocker offense, which runs you through screens the whole game. That could be an advantage for Virginia.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, Chris. They had to travel to Colorado before in that first round, then come back, then travel to Oklahoma a few days later and come back, and now travel to Virginia. That can wear on you in itself, just three road trips in less than a week. That can be, or maybe a little over a week. I'm not sure when they played Colorado, but that can wear on you, especially like you said, with no depth. I know that some programs over the years, Bobby Crimmins used to be famous for this, was playing only six or seven guys. And in one way, it's helpful that your guys can get into a rhythm. They know what to expect. They know what's coming, and they can get into a kind of a playing groove. And that can be helpful. But at the same time, as you mentioned, that can, you know, three games in a little over a week, three road trips, playing the pack line where you got to chase and chase and chase. That can wear you down with only five players. And I'm sure Tony will try to use that to their advantage. So I guess it can work both ways. And, you know, not only did they beat Marquette, but they beat Clemson this year early in the season. They beat Boise State. They beat VCU once. I think they might have split. And they split with Richmond. So they've played some pretty good competition. You know, like our friend Mike Bray at Notre Dame says, there's nothing like being old as a basketball team. You don't get much older than having five seniors, that's for sure.
Five seniors. Yeah, when I saw that today when I was doing the research on St. Bonaventure, you just don't see that in this day and age, five seniors starting for a team like that. And Mark Schmidt's been successful 15 years at St. Bonaventure, a 267-194 record. You know, some UVA fans look at it and say, well, Tony's only playing seven guys. You know, we need to play more bench guys. This guy plays pretty much five guys. I mean, his three of his starters average 38 minutes a game. So, and haven't come out. When I was looking at this, their backcourt hasn't come out of a game for the last three games, their conference tournament game, the two NIT games. The only guy who really gets any significant bench minutes, and this is only relative, Osan Osanayi, the center, the 6'10 center, a senior, obviously, he averages 31 minutes a game. His backup, Abdul Karim Koulibaly, he played, what did I have him for, 6 minutes at Oklahoma, 9 minutes at Colorado, 8 minutes against St. Louis, their last three games. So that's your bench. They rank, KenPom.com has a lot of interesting deep stats. St. Bonaventure ranks 358th dead last in Division I in bench minutes. They only get 11% of their minutes per game from their bench. So, when you see that starting lineup roll out there, and they don't get in foul trouble. I looked at those numbers too. Looking at sportsreference.com, even their center, even the big guy, Osonyani, he averages right around 2.1 fouls per game, and he's playing, you know, pretty much the whole game. So he blocks 2.9 shots and also avoids fouls. So that's going to be a challenge for Caden Shedrick and Francisco Cafaro, who both fouled out last night, as we saw, trying to defend a really good big guy. That might be the matchup that Virginia needs to focus on is at center.
Yeah, I agree. They should attack him every chance they get. But Cafaro and Shedrick, they need to step their game up big time tomorrow night, because they neither one of them were very effective out in Texas last night. Not only did they both foul out, but collectively their statistics were really poor. They just had a handful of rebounds and a few points between
four,
them. So
4 points, three rebounds total, yeah. 10 fouls.
That's not very good.
And, that's not good.
They're going to have to pick it up for sure. Because, you know, I don't know how inside out or outside in St. Bonaventure might be, but I do know that in both NIT wins, they've put up 10 three-pointers, made 10 three-pointers in both games. So that's a threat. That's the kind of team that can hurt Virginia. If they can make those kind of three-pointers and pull Virginia out, particularly if their big guy inside can do any damage, because and it sounds like he must be able to, or they wouldn't be able to be afforded the opportunity to make 23s in two games. So it's going to be very important, I think, to control the paint between Shedrick and Cafaro. And that's where I would start.
You know, generally they're not a great three-point shooting team. So the last two games they have been, but on the season, 33.2%. But what they do is they use a lot of pick and roll action, and their bigs, I say bigs, their power forward's only 6'5". But he is also their leading scorer, Jaden Attaway. He's really good, kind of like the guy last night for North Texas, who's not as big, but really good on the rolls and the lane cuts. Jalen Attaway is a guy to watch, and he could be a matchup problem for Gardner. Now Gardner will have an advantage on the other side with his size and his bulk, but Attaway can be tough to guard on the movement kind of things that a big guy can give you. But Osanyani is you got to watch him on the lane cuts, back end of pick and rolls. He's not so good on post ups, but you know, they run so many pick and rolls, and you know, Virginia likes to defend it with the big, you know, and hedging and trying to double team the ball out of the point guard's hands. But that's going to require Gardner on the back end. It's going to require Beekman maybe on the back end to be, and Franklin on the back end to be looking out for their guys, because this guy is effective at moving there. And so, so yeah, a challenge there. And then, you know, and they've got enough guys to pop from the perimeter. And obviously the last two games being indicative that they're a hot team from three right now. So, defensively they can, you know, because they only play five guys and they want to avoid foul trouble as a result, they can be exploited a little bit on the defensive end, because they, you know, they want to keep guys in, on the floor. And their weak link might be their shooting guard, Jaron Holmes. He's got to guard somebody, and he's actually rated by Synergy Sports a pretty poor defender. So, you know, if he matched up with Franklin, matched up with Beekman, that's who I expect he might match up with. Whoever he's matched up with has to really attack and try to take advantage of that matchup.
Yeah, he scored 23 points at Oklahoma last night, 8 of 12 shooting. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Beekman start on him and try to keep him under control from the start. I think that would be a good strategy to put Beekman on him to try to contain the big guy to where he can't do any damage. And then offensively, make them chase you late into the shot clock, because these guys, I know they're playing on fumes, I would think, and you want to try to wear them down as much as possible. So I would expect that kind of a strategy from Virginia going into the game. And you're right, you might be able to exploit him by being aggressive, more drives to the basket, because they can't afford to get in the foul trouble.
Looking for a great dining experience in Charlottesville? Look no further than the Aberdeen Barn. The Barn has been family-owned and operated since 1965, with Terry and Angela providing great atmosphere and mouth-watering food at Virginia's big-time steakhouse. Enjoy the fine dining or relax in the Sportsman's Bar, a fantastic place to wind down and socialize, surrounded by flat-screen televisions tuned to the latest sporting events. You never know who you might bump into at the Aberdeen Barn, where all the greatest Cavaliers have dined over the decades and keep coming back for the delicious menu and good times. Check it out online at aberdeenbarn.com or call 434-296-4630.
Hey, this is Thomas Q. Jones, former UVA All-American running back, and you're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Wahoo! Wah.
They can't. They don't have anybody to play behind them. Yeah, and if it happens that the big guy gets in foul trouble, Koulibaly, who's the backup at five, his metrics don't look good at all. He's the worst defender on the team, and by a measure of above and beyond in that sense. So if you get to the second tier, then you're getting inexperienced guys, and they're on the bench for a reason. So. Chance for, you know, that's make them work. Be patient if you're Virginia. Don't try to force anything, and make them run, because we're both teams are going to be tired, but they've got to really be running on fumes, like you said.
Yeah, and they tried a little bit with Tane Murray last night, but we all saw quickly why he hasn't been playing, because there were two blow-bys past him for easy layups, and that tells the story there. But I'm sure Virginia's going to be tired too. So it's going to be the fact that Virginia's home will probably help a little bit. At least they got to sleep in their own beds last night and tonight. I just think that playing at home is going to give them a little bit of an edge.
Scott German, our colleague, and I were texting last night after the game, and I talked about how with Scott, how Cody Statman had 9 points and 10 rebounds, and Tony, because of the foul trouble and also because of the ineffectiveness of Cafaro and Shedrick, went with a four guard lineup with Jaden Gardner at center, or Cody Statman at center, because Cody Statman was guarding their big guy Osmania an awful lot late in the game last night. And Scott texted me at one point, great centers in UVA history. Number one, Ralph Sampson, Number two, et cetera. And then like number five, Cody Statman, because Cody last night, a career high 10 rebounds. He's really been playing well of late. I'd say maybe since the Miami game, the Miami home game back on February 5th, he has just been really giving them minutes. Gave him 35 minutes last night off the bench, giving them minutes, giving them points when they need it. Good defense, rebounding when needed. You know, Cody Statman's doing a lot of things that we love talking about. Jason Williford. Jason Williford, I used to think of in the on those 90s teams, was the glue guy. He just did everything that needed done. Absolutely. And Cody's been our glue guy the last month or so.
Yeah, you got to give him credit. After somewhat of a lackluster career, he's kind of put it together and locked his game down over the past month. He's, you know, they trust him defensively. He can do a good job in that department. He's been able to contribute in the scoring column in the past several games. And like you said, 10 rebounds last night, that was more than you would ever expect from him, because he's not the biggest guy in the world. But he has been playing very aggressively, and you got to give him credit. The fact that he played 35 minutes, that says a lot. And speaking of that, Beekman played 45. He didn't step off the floor for a second last night. So these guys are giving everything they've got. When Tony said we're in it to win it, I think his team has bought into that. I think they're giving everything they've got to try to make it to New York.
Yeah, Beekman, 13 points. These are from memory, so I'm pretty sure this is right. 13 points on 6 of 9 shooting. 7 rebounds, 9 assists, 1 turnover in 45 minutes, and 3 steals, and a couple other deflections and things like that don't count as steals because other guys ended up with the ball. But, yeah, what a night. Beekman has just been playing so well.
You look at his stat lines lately, and they just blow your mind. I mean, anybody who appreciates total basketball – you look at this guy and just say, God, you know, he's just a sophomore. What's he going to be like the next 2 years? Because his game, offensive game, is growing by the week. He already had great defense and passing skills and doesn't turn it over and everything else. But now that you add some of these offensive weapons he's starting to develop, he's going to end up, you know, if he continues to develop like this, Chris, he could be one of the greatest players that's ever raced to orange and blue.
He's an NBA player. We've known that since he walked on grounds last year. We just had to wait for him to develop into what we're seeing, and he's still going to develop more. But the way he's playing right now, he's already one of those, you know, I'm thinking of baseball terminology, 5 tool guys. His defense already makes him a borderline NBA player. Now that he's developing the offense, he's starting to shoot better from the perimeter. He can attack the rim. He's finally confident, and he's curling off those screens and hitting little jump shots. And, you know, he's finding his teammates. He doesn't turn the ball over. He's in top 10 in the country in assist to turnover ratio. He's everything. And then he's playing with confidence. He's a humble young man. There's nothing not to like about Reese Beekman. The only thing is, I wonder about the 2 years part of what you said there, Jerry, because if he keeps developing the way he developed this year, we may have 1 year. We better savor what we have with Reese Beekman, because he's really good.
Yeah, you're right. I was trying not to say that. But sometimes if you say it, it comes true. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, if he continues to develop like this, it's going to be hard to keep him down on the farm, as they say. The fact that he has such a great feel for passing the ball to his teammates. I mean, he's been putting up some incredible assist numbers lately. And like you said, there's nobody in the country better in assist to turnover ratio. And he's way up in the national stats in steals. Wow. I mean, he blows me away every time I see him playing. I think it all goes back to him, just his confidence growing, because it just seems so reluctant offensively as a freshman. And then for the better part of this season, and it's something that a light came on or something. And he just seems to be beaming with confidence now. And I think that's made a huge difference in him becoming a complete player.
So we're going to talk Virginia women's basketball in a second, but Jerry, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't just talk general ACC for just a minute. The ACC didn't have a lot of love this year. The national writers said this was a down year. There was talk for a while. Hey, this might be a one bid league this year in the NCAA tournament. There are three teams in the Sweet 16 from the ACC that's tied for the most with one other conference, the Pac-12, I think it is. The Big 12, with three in the Sweet 16. North Carolina, as a very underseeded 8 seed, dominated Baylor, and then after losing Brady Manek to a chintzy call, rallied in overtime and won and knocked off Baylor, defending national champs. Miami absolutely owned Auburn, who was 22-1 to start this season last night, winning by double digits, and it was easy for Miami to do that. Duke, of course, a tough win, but a big win over another Big Ten team in Michigan State. Virginia and Wake Forest are both in the final eight of the NIT. We saw Notre Dame win the first four game, then win its first round game and play well. And I thought kind of got hosed down the stretch by some non-calls in the last minute of their loss to, I think it was Texas Tech. So the ACC has availed itself well after a whole season, 5 months of trash talk from everybody who could possibly talk. I feel redeemed as an ACC guy.
Yeah, I remember talking to the ACC sort of director of basketball back. He was at a home UVA game back in, I guess, early February. And I just said, you know, what is it that the rest of the country's just disrespecting the ACC? And he said, and he was right. He said, well, we didn't do well in non-conference early. And he was right. They didn't. But I think, as Tony Bennett said last night after the win in Texas, he said, I think the rest of the country rushed to judgment on the ACC. And, you know, you're supposed to be judged on your entire body of work, not just, and what teams do is – they have new faces, they have new players, they have new chemistry, like Virginia. And I'm sure it was true with some of these other teams as well. And it's up to a coach and his staff to develop these players and bring them together and have them playing their best basketball the last month of the season. And that's what a lot of these ACC teams have done. I just felt like they were disrespected, prejudged early, like, well, these guys aren't any good. They're not going to be any good. And they've proven the pundits wrong. I was so happy for Jim Larrañaga last night, not to mention that they beat Auburn, which is a team I can't stand, but in any sport. But I was just so happy for Jim Larrañaga. And he might have had the quote of the tournament, Chris, when he said he read somewhere, I don't know if it was at halftime or before the game, that Charles Barkley said that if Auburn lost to Miami, he would – or something like that, he would – if maybe – I don't know exactly what it was, but he would take his shirt off on national TV. And Jimmy said, Chuck, nobody needs to see that.
No, please, no. We'll pay you extra money. Keep it on. In fact, put a sweater on top of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was happy for all the ACC teams. I wish Notre Dame had been able to pull it out, too, because they were – I agree. I think they got hosed a little bit on some poor calls down the stretch of that game.
I'll tell you, Wake Forest would like a do-over. They should have been an NCAA tournament team, and, you know, they – I don't know what happened that they didn't get in. Their metrics were great. And, you know, there's no sense in that. Yeah. And even Virginia. Now, nobody was arguing Virginia's case when they lost North Carolina in the ACC tournament quarterfinals. Record against teams currently in the Sweet 16, 4-4. So that's not a bad profile. In years past, your sixth place ACC team would have been in the NCAA tournament without a question. And maybe next year we can just teach those national people to just chill out a little bit. You know, let us develop. We'll be fine. So. Looking forward to seeing how Virginia, Wake do in the NIT, and then our teams in the ACC in the Sweet 16 do later this week. Hey, let's turn our attention to women's basketball real quick. Virginia names Missouri State's head coach, Amaka, Coach Mox. Amaka is her first name, but she goes by Coach Mox. Agugwa Hamilton, who had at Missouri State in three seasons, 74-15 record, two NCAA tournament appearances. She would have made it the other year if not for COVID. Sweet 16 appearance at Missouri State last year, beat Florida State in the NCAA tournament this year before losing. She's a Virginia native from Herndon, Virginia, Oakton High School. Great coaching pedigree. She played at Hofstra, then she coached as an assistant at VCU, ODU, a long tenure at Michigan State as a top assistant there before getting her first head coaching job at Missouri State. She's only 38 years old, so she's got room to grow. I'm seeing a lot of comments, Jerry, from across college basketball landscape that says this is not just a good hire, but a great hire for Virginia.
Yeah, you would hope so. And I'm going to call her Coach Mox too.
Much easier. We'll just go that route.
much easier. Like Coach K. But yeah, she has a great pedigree and she's won at some really good programs. I was impressed at 46-6 in the Missouri Valley Conference. That's pretty much owning your conference for three seasons. It sounds like to me that Carla Williams really vetted her and perhaps some other candidates. We don't know exactly who else she might have been on her short list, but it sounds like she certainly had a long time to find the right candidate, because it was apparent early on that Tina Thompson was going to be fired at the end of the season over. So Carla had plenty of time to do her research and find someone who could come in and re-energize this program. I ran into Debbie Ryan at a function the other night, and you could just tell that she was very hurt about how this program has imploded over the last, how many years? It's been a long, long time, Chris, since they've been even competitive in the ACC. I don't know how she feels about this hire, but I'm sure she has to be somewhat fired up about it, because Coach Mox has some really nice credentials. Everything you read about her, from being a coach to a great human being, should resonate with UVA fans and the UVA fan base. And she just seems very grounded. I won't go out on a limb and put pressure on her saying that she's the female Tony Bennett, but she sounds like she brings a lot of the same qualities to Virginia women's basketball that Tony brings to the men. And certainly looks like a great hire, and we would expect nothing less from Carla after getting an opportunity to find the right person.
Yeah, you look at her stats for Missouri State, and they play defense. So, yeah, there's a similarity with Tony there. Hey, we got quotes. I got a couple quotes. Debbie Ryan did weigh in, and Debbie said her teams always travel well-prepared. Are always well-prepared, play extremely hard and are very intelligent. The game is fun for the players, and she creates a family atmosphere on the team. Amaka will bring an immediate level of excitement to UVA women's basketball that will ignite our fans, our players, and future student athletes. Our players will work hard and compete on every play as we strive to win a championship. That's from Debbie Ryan. Don Staley also weighed in. Amaka is an elite coach and proven winner who understands the expectations and traditions of the University of Virginia. She brings a culture of success and attracts student athletes who exemplify the character and athleticism that it takes to win championships. And I'll throw one more in from her former boss at Michigan State, Susie Merchant. That's where Coach Mox was the top assistant for several years. Virginia got a good one in Coach Mox. She is committed to integrity, character, and competitive excellence both on and off the court. She's been a tremendous leader of young women in our profession, and there is no question she will make an immediate impact in the storied UVA women's program. Can't wait to watch that program soar. So some comments from across the spectrum there. And it's great to have Debbie weighing in, considering, Jerry, your comments from a few days ago before this hire. And also Don Staley. I mean, Don, you know, the the alum who's won championships at South Carolina right now, maybe at the top of that profession. And her ringing endorsement speaks volumes too.
Yeah, no question. And I had a thought and it slipped my mind up. Anyway, I think she's a really good hire. And the fact that those people have respect for her speaks volumes, because Dawn certainly has her eye on all of women's college basketball. She's, like you said, I think most of the coaches around the country look to her for inspiration, because she's not only good for South Carolina, but she's good for the women's game in general. She's very outspoken about women's basketball. And of course, Debbie, being in the Hall of Fame, and even though she's removed from coaching world and doing more fundraising for UVA's Cancer Center, she still keeps an eye on the women's game, and she knows who's good out there. I know I was talking about some potential candidates for the job. So she schooled me on who might be on the list and who might not be. And she informed me that, and I wasn't unaware of it at the time, that Tammy Reese had removed herself from any consideration, that she wanted to stay at Rhode Island. So there was no need for Virginia to even ask, although Virginia may have approached her. I don't know, but it certainly sounds like Coach Mox is going to bring a lot to the table. Oh, and my thought that slipped away was that she's going to have a challenge, Chris, because it's almost like starting from scratch with this women's team. There's not much talent on that team. So she's going to have to recruit and teach and coach, instill her culture on this program, which I'm not sure there was any culture before. So she's got an uphill battle, and I'm sure she's up for the task. She knows what she's stepping into, but she seems, Coach Mox seems to be moxie enough to be able to handle.
Yeah, her average record the last 3 years will be 25-5. Don't expect 25-5 this year. It's a rebuilding job from block one, and it's in the ACC, where you've got some great programs that you've got to play night in and night out. So give her a year or two. But, I would expect to see just different effort from the team, and different, you'll see some upset wins, I would think, in year one. I mean, this team, if they play with her moxie, here we go, we're already starting. But if they play with the moxie we expect out of Coach Mox's teams, we might have somebody special there. So,
yeah. And then before we fade off into something else, I want to bring up Greenberry's Coffee, our major sponsor of the podcast, along with Aberdeen Barn and UVA Orthopedics. Greenberry's Coffee is official coffee of JerryRatcliffe.com. We're going to have a special promotion coming up soon. We're working on all the details of that. Check out their ad also on my website for free coffee, free opportunities for free coffee at Greenberry's. They're all over Charlottesville. They're in Harrisonburg, D.C., Maryland, and around the globe, actually. So, it's mind-blowing, all the products they have for you guys to enjoy. So make sure you go buy Greenberry's and tell them Hootie sent you. Pretty soon I may be sharing a cup with you on a weekly basis. I'll put that out there as a teaser. But thank them for sponsoring the podcast and our website. It's very important that we thank our sponsors for the free content.
That's at JerryRatcliffe.com. You can look for the more news and analysis of the new UVA women's coaching hire. Of course, getting you ready also for the NIT tomorrow night. Also, this week's spring football practice starts, and so it's a busy time for us right now. There's a lot of baseball is 19-1 after a weekend sweep of Boston College.
We're going crazy.
I did some math, Jerry, averaging 11.2 runs a game, and the team ERA I think was 2.35 as of this morning. So Jake Geloff with 12 home runs in 20 games,
leading the country
leading the country, 45 runs batted in. These are video game like numbers for Geloff and the baseball team.
And the women's swimming team, back to back natties. I mean, we're gonna have to have a couple of those gals on a future soon podcast because they might be starting a dynasty or something here with a couple of those swimmers are just unbelievable. I mean, they are just breaking records left and right.
I forgot we hadn't talked since Friday night. That's when maybe it was Saturday night when the championship was secured. So yeah, boy, it's a busy time. Springtime's like that. Springtime's a busy time on grounds with all the sports. So yeah, we got to get back together here later this week and talk some more. And yeah, let's line up some swimmers if we can to get some of those ladies on here. Tomorrow night, a busy night with the NIT and Jerry and I will be courtside. Actually, my wife will be courtside, Jerry. She got some of those tickets. She's sitting three rows behind the basket on the Virginia side. So
we'll have a better perch than we will.
She will. Yeah, that's right. She'll hear them talking to each other. So it's great to see the fans. I might have mentioned this earlier, the tickets, the lower level sold out in 45 minutes. The fans are excited. So it should be a fun time tomorrow night. Get ready for the game at jerryratcliffe.com and augustafreepress.com. For Jerry Ratcliffe, I'm Chris Graham signing off. Everyone have a great day.